Wieland Presley and Van Hull Funeral Homes have been serving Quad City families and veterans for over 100 years. Wieland Presley is located in Rock Island, Milan, Reynolds, and Van Hull in East Moline, proudly supporting WQPT.
Is Congress getting anything accomplished this year? We talk with Western Illinois' representative in Washington on the cities. The first quarter of the second session of the 118th Congress is over. That's a mouthful. And this session of America's legislature has been characterized as a uniquely ineffectual Congress. Intense partisanship has led to gridlock, and Republican political infighting has stalled a lot of legislation. The latest budget bill agreement was approved in a bipartisan vote, but even that has had political implications. Western Illinois Congressman Eric Sorensen, a Democrat, joined me in the studio. And as a note, I worked with Eric Sorensen at WQAD-TV before he ran for Congress. Let's talk about the $1.2 trillion budget plan that has been passed. Mm-hmm. It was a bipartisan effort, but it was, continual resolutions since September. This really illustrates the dysfunction of Congress right now for a spending bill and getting the nation on a secure fiscal footing.
Right. Well, at least this gets us to the end of the fiscal year. I think that's important to understand.
So, which is September.
It gets us to September. I am grateful that it was a bipartisan deal, that we were actually able to vote for it on the Democratic and the Republican side, aside from just some on the fringe. But look, what happened here with this particular budget means that we can bring funding back home. So just for the metro area, our community funded projects are in that budget. So we were able to bring money back for the Rock Island Milan Beltway, for instance. It's crumbling such in a way that people don't even take the Beltway anymore because of the concrete. You drive now I'd rather drive through Milan than take the Beltway. And so what we're able to do is appropriate some funds for that. Also for lead service line replacement, up the bluff from downtown Moline. So this is funding that is coming back to our communities so that we don't have to see another property sales or property tax increase. And so bringing that money back eases the burden a little bit on our local communities.
It also includes 8,000 more detention beds for migrants awaiting their immigration proceedings or removal from the country, a 24% increase from current levels. That's what Republicans wanted. The hiring of 2,000 more Border Patrol agents as well. Mm-hmm. Was that something you were for or against? Because you vote for a budget, but you don't necessarily agree with everything that's in it.
Well, first things first is we need more customs and border protection agents at the border. That I actually have an amendment to HR 2 that states that we need to hire more there. And this is a bipartisan amendment. Also, one of the amendments to HR 2, which is the immigration package in the House, is to make sure that we're using technology to find the fentanyl as it's crossing the border, because it is coming across the border in legal points of entry. It's coming in on freight trains and in semi-trailers, in containers that are coming across the border into Long Beach, California. We need to use our technology to make sure that this doesn't make it to our hometowns and into our families. The problem here is, these are bipartisan issues. These are bipartisan amendments that I have, and they made it nowhere near the floor of the House because we still have a Speaker of the House that wants to play politics in an election.
Well, and America is watching. Because everyone's got amendments inside a border bill that they can tout and say, see, I'm being bipartisan.
Right.
But put in its entirety, it's going nowhere.
Well,
especially in an election year.
Right. And people would say, well, Congressman, why aren't you bringing these things to the floor? Well, the issue is we have the legislation. We have worked on the legislation. I have gone across the aisle to find the people that would sign this legislation to make it bipartisan. But the problem is only the Speaker of the House can bring these to the floor for a vote. And there are tens of thousands of bills and resolutions and amendments that are log jammed right now because the speaker is going through one by one and saying, this one is good for election, this one's not. This one's good for the election.
But isn't that called politics?
But that's the problem today.
It's been the problem for a long time. I mean, the immigration issues in the United States and border security has been an issue, not just since Speaker Johnson took over. I mean, we've been looking at this since the Reagan era and afterwards. We've had fixes in the past that didn't end up being fixes. So, I mean, is it possible that it has to be more piecemeal rather than a broad stroke for immigration and border security?
Well, I think understanding today that you have a large majority of the House of Representatives that are for these pieces of legislation. You have the Freedom Caucus on the far right that is literally holding everything up. And the Speaker of the House is beholden to this group. Otherwise, we would be able to pass these and get 300 yes votes today. You know, and that's where we are. So, and that's how the House of Representatives always has been. This is a great body, a legislative body, that it's majority rule. But right now what's happened is you have five or six and the Speaker of the House is beholden to them. So it isn't working the way that it's supposed to work.
You can't solve that either, because you're going to have that five or six. The Republicans already created the rule on being able to remove a speaker or definitely put them on pins and needles if they're not doing it in a certain way. I mean, that's not going to change.
No, and we saw that with, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene, you know, before we were on this 2-week recess to be able to say, no, we're going to vacate the chair. You know, I'm not getting what I want. And so, you know, much like a toddler who has a temper tantrum, we're giving so much attention to that toddler with the temper tantrum, but every adult knows to de-escalate that, you don't give the attention to the people who don't deserve it. And that's the problem today.
It's the problem today, but isn't it going to be the problem tomorrow and the next day and the next day? I mean, how does that get solved?
Well, I think you have to have more people who are in the middle. The only people that are willing or able to have a handshake are those that are sitting in closer proximity to the middle of the aisle, right? It's not the extremists on either side.
And there are extremists on either side. I mean, you can find Republicans that are more than happy to point out certain Democrats that they believe are way out of touch. But let's be honest. Those way out of touch politicians on both sides were elected by people in their district.
Right. They represent a certain district, right? But that isn't what is the majority. And we have to come together as a majority. You know, for instance, I am absolutely pro securing our border, making sure that the legal pathway is there for immigration for the people that want to follow our laws. But there are some, you know, on the far left that's too restrictive for them. But that's where the House of Representatives is a beautiful place because it allows us to find the consensus to be able to get legislation through.
So what would you say is appropriate border security then? Is it a continuation of the wall, which was denigrated but hasn't been torn down, you know, the parts that were built? I mean, is that something that now should be considered because of what we're seeing on the border, especially what about a million I don't want to say detentions, but a million different migrants coming across since the beginning of the fiscal year.
We need to make sure that the border is secure. And whether that is a wall in a rural area or that's customs and border protection agents in another, we need to make sure that our sovereignty remains. But then also it's taking it one step further and saying, why are people coming to the southern border? We're seeing so much stress and violence in Central America. We're seeing the effect of a changing climate that is causing the chaos. And that's why people are migrating to the north. And this isn't something that's just going to go away with political posturing.
The impeachment of the Homeland Security Secretary, Alejandro Mayorkas. Democrats are going to say that this is just a political football that the Republicans are playing with. But hasn't that position been somewhat ineffectual right now? Or do you feel that he's doing the best job with the cards he's dealt?
I mean, look, one person isn't going to be able to solve the problem. And I think in some respects you have the House GOP today that just wants to play games with this situation and say, well, it's the secretary's fault and let's just impeach him and be done with it. But that doesn't solve the problem.
But even the head of U.S. Border Control just said that what's going on at the southern border is a national security threat. Mm-hmm. And so isn't that saying that Homeland Security and Border Patrol just are not doing their jobs?
I don't think that we have the capability of doing that today, which is why I think we need to hire 5,000 more CPB officers. We need to find the fentanyl that's coming across the border. We need to make sure that the legal channels are there, because quite simply, what's happening on the southern border today is no different than for anybody in Western Illinois that goes to Walmart and says, wait a minute, there's one lane out of 16 lanes open, right? If people are stacked up with their shopping carts, at some point, people are going to get so frustrated, they're going to go and wheel their cart right out the front door. That's what's happening. And we need to make sure that it works not only for the benefit of people who want to follow our laws, but then also for the benefit and the sovereignty of our country.
Let's stick with the grocery cart right now, is because the economy is getting better. But Democrats are getting no credit. This president is getting no credit for it. National polls are showing he's just as unpopular as before, and his handling of the economy has not been good. Is this an economy that you are proud to run for re-election on?
I mean, look, you know, in the previous president said, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? 4 years ago, we didn't have toilet paper, right? We are better off than we were 4 years ago. We are in the right direction. The price of goods, the price of the cost of inflation is going down. You know, I've got legislation that would prevent big pharma from delaying generics to get to market, because we need to bring the cost of prescription drugs down. We need a lot of things to happen, yet there still are people in our communities that are having a tough time. They're struggling to make ends meet. And so there is a lot more work to do, but that means that we can't turn around and go back to where we are. We need to finish the job.
I know that you feel the empathy, but what can government do to help those people that are struggling? We're talking about rising gas prices. There's not a lot the federal government could do unless you want to flood the market with more gasoline. That's not going to happen. The Federal Reserve is in charge of interest rates, not necessarily, you know, Congress. What is there that you can do?
Well, look, I mean, it's looking at childcare, for instance. You know, I had a round table with just ladies who are in unions, just women around the table. I'm a believer that if you're not sitting around the table, there's good chance you're on the menu. And so putting people around the table, hardworking women, to say, what are the biggest challenges? Overall, every one of them told me it was childcare. That the cost of childcare continues to go up in such a way. I had a constituent call me up and say, I work now 4 hours out of the day to be able to afford for my kids to go to childcare. So the only way that I'm going to make any money is the last 3 hours after my lunch break. That's a problem today. We have to tackle that. We need to make sure that there's more young people that are going to go into this field, understanding that childcare is a great field to go into, but then also we need to make sure that it is connected to more employers so that employers can provide childcare for their employees.
I want to talk about the farm bill too. That's such a major issue for this area, and we're going to wait until the end of the year. Now, the farm bill has always been a bipartisan, if not a nonpartisan issue.
Right.
It was more of a urban-rural lawmaker issue, but we have seen it become more and more a partisan issue. And one of the things is that Republicans have repeatedly wanted to remove SNAP benefits, which makes up, I think, 70-80% of the farm bill.
Correct.
Do you see that is what's going to be a part of the farm bill fight once again as we head into the fall?
Right. It already is. In fact, just before I came back home from D.C., we had a meeting, and it was the status of where we are in the farm bill and the thrifty food plan, the SNAP benefits, they're all being taken away in some form. Now, I can't, in good conscience, tell a single mother that, you know what, your $120 is going to be $70 and there's nothing I can do. You know, I've got to fight for that. That's what, you know, speaking of the farm bill, I also hear that from our family farmers. They don't want it cut either. We need to make sure, especially as we're seeing people struggle to make ends meet, that we're not taking the rug right out from under them. Because the farm bill is a food bill. And so we need to make sure that we fight for that. I'm also fighting to make sure that there is a better connection for crop insurance. I hear from producers as we get more extreme weather that's happening, that, hey, we need a better safety net for crop insurance. We also need to make sure that we focus on research. The University of Illinois research and the Ag Extension, the technologies from the 1960s. We need to invest in these things, and those are the things that we're fighting for in the Farm Bill.
Well, as you know, the Farm Bill is a five-year bill, and last time it mm-hmm. went beyond the deadline. And so there was chaos in the farm community. Are you almost intimating that we can expect that again? I mean, we're talking about, once again, it's a political year, and the months are ticking down to the deadline.
Right. When I went and talked with the folks in the Agriculture Committee in the Senate, this was back last year, I said, I don't want the farm bill to get into the mud of politics. And so I was pushing for an extension to this March, this past month, so that we could get it done before we get into political season. The problem is we had to go until September. So right now, we've got the ability there to negotiate for a farm bill until September. Well, we know where we're going to be in September.
Well, September, you're also going to have to do another budget bill, too.
Right, right. So it's kicking this can down the road just far enough that the can just doesn't roll right off the edge.
Foreign affairs. And let's start mm-hmm. with Israel and its war against Hamas. We're hearing growing voices that Israel's just going too far. That it's time for a ceasefire, that it's time to stop punishing the Palestinian people for what Hamas did mm-hmm. in October. Where do you stand on that? And is your opinion of this war evolving?
Yeah, I think everything is, as you learn more, as you take in more facts, there is an evolution of your position. Look, first and foremost, what happened on October 7th can't ever happen again. This was an atrocity of terrorism that took innocent life. And so Israel has the and should have the ability to defend itself from that. Now, has the Netanyahu regime gone too far? I believe that they have. That I am.
You say regime rather than government.
Or government. Right. I mean, here's the thing, is we have to be able to separate the Jewish people from the government of Netanyahu. The same way that I separate the people in Palestine, the Palestinian people, from Hamas. We have to separate these two things. What is going to be in the best interest of Israel? What is going to be in the best interest of the peaceful Palestinian people? That's what I want to look at. How do we find this? And every day I'm asking that question, how do we get to this place where it is peaceful, it is prosperous, where we are getting the aid to where it is, but also much like what happened after World War II, there needs to be a Marshall Plan of sorts. Who's coming up with it? Because we have so many people that are living in poverty, even before in Gaza, one of the most impoverished places in the world. Who is helping them today? It's going to take allies from around the world to be able to say, we're going to rebuild Gaza. But then it also means that people like Netanyahu have to agree on a two-state solution. And so far, he has come short on that.
I want to talk about one of your favorite topics, space exploration, the Artemis mission, and also the Odyssey lander. Was that a disappointment to you? I should explain, the Odyssey, of course, landing on the moon, tipping right. over or landing on its side, and sending only limited but valuable information.
Right. Well, understanding that, as we push the limits of science, of what we're able to do in space, I mean, there are going to be setbacks. I mean, some can also look at the telescopes that we were able to put out into deep space that we didn't think were going to work, that are working today. But understanding that we can't give up on the Artemis program, because what this will do is be able to take us from the International Space Station, which is only going to last until 2030. What is going to be our mode after 2030 that is going to give us a place in space? It's going to be on the lunar surface that will then take us to Mars, to the surface of Mars with humans. And so this is in the next 20, 25 years. So one setback, we can't say give up because of one setback. But then it's also making sure that we're doing the right things. I'm concerned about cost overruns as well, but then I'm also cognizant that this is an investment. We wouldn't have computers in our pockets if the Apollo mission didn't succeed.
There are, of course, the critics that why are we spending money on this when there's money better spent? It's a pretty powerful argument.
Right. And I will even tell you, Jim, that we're going to need $1 billion of allocation to be able to safely dismantle the ISS, the International Space Station, upon its completion in 2030. We're going to have to start appropriating that because we just can't let it go there because it would be a disaster. And so there is going to be a cost. But I believe that the benefit and the things that we learn with respect to science will outweigh that.
In the moments we have left, get me through the summer. Yeah. What can we expect out of Washington in the months before November's election? Is it all going to be posturing, or will there be any accomplishments that you're expecting?
Well, look, I mean, I'm first and foremost looking at the appropriations that we were just able to get through to make sure that the funding gets to our hometowns. 13 out of the 14 appropriations requests that I put through were granted. We're bringing back more than $100 million of taxpayer dollars back to Western and Northwestern Illinois. And so what I've got to make sure now is that the money is getting to the people who need it and that we're getting the shovels into the ground. Because until we get the shovels into the ground, there's always a chance that the funding could go away. And so those are the things that I'll be working on in the next couple of months. But then also, we're taking care of appropriations already. In fact, my team is already working, for instance, on next year's NDAA, which will be able to be even more robust for things like the Rock Island Arsenal. And so these are the things that we're already working for next year's budget.
Is that a key issue? I mean, to make sure, like you bring up the arsenal, is some of the employment issues that are in Western Illinois is to make sure that there is funding, that there is safety nets for people who lose their jobs, that there is, as you were saying, a more robust economy?
Well, quite simply, we need to understand that we need more investment in the Rock Island Arsenal because it increases the value of it in the long term.
And a lot of that's been public-private. I mean, that's what Arsenal leaders keep saying, is let us keep doing more private partnerships.
Right. So the value of the advanced manufacturing technology that's going on at the Arsenal increases our productivity, increases the output of the arsenal, but then it decreases any chance in the future of a BRAC. And those are the things that we've got to focus on every day, every month, and every year, because this is such an economic driver for the entire region.
Our thanks to Western Illinois Democratic Congressman Eric Sorensen. Beth Ann Heitgerten started her love of performing while attending high school in Dubuque. It led her to study music at the University of Iowa. Now she lives in Davenport, raising a family, still pursuing that love of music. She joined us as part of the WQPT Chords and Coffee Sessions to perform one of her originals. Here's Beth Ann Heitgerten with Answer Right.
Inspiration often hits like when you're trying to go to sleep and I will have to make myself get up and like write down what I was thinking and maybe go grab an instrument to like figure out a couple of chords so it's more ingrained, or else it just is gone. And I'll wake up in the morning being like, oh, I had that really good song idea and I completely forgot it.
You've been saying
It's got kind of a poppy feel, and the, I guess the lyrics behind it are kind of fun. It's about like being out with a person and wanting to have like a good time and like be flirty and cute, but the other person's just not being flirty and cute. And they might actually be getting on your nerves. So it's kind of about that feeling, which is not very deep, but it's a fun song.
I don't want to be lonely, but you got to have that answer right. 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 Oh, you got to have that answer right. Oh, you got to have that answer right. Oh, you got to have that answer right. You got to have that answer right. You got to have that answer right. You got to have that answer right.
Beth Ann Hurtgarten with Answer Right. On the air, on the radio, on the web, on your mobile device, and streaming on your computer, thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.
Whelan Presley and Van Hoe Funeral Homes have been serving Quad City families and veterans for over 100 years. Whelan Presley is located in Rock Island, Milan, Reynolds, and Van Hoe in East Moline, proudly supporting WQPT.